The following previews are of graphic audio productions rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Eagles 12, Crusade of Eagles. McAllister clan was raised on a harsh, unforgiving frontier where courage and blood bonds mattered the most. While Falcon McAllister followed his father's mountain man legacy, his brother and sister made their fame and fortune on the stages of New York and Europe. Now, they're planning a family reunion. Andrew and Rosanna McAllister are headed to Colorado to visit their kin until they step into the crosshairs of a murderer's plan.
I'm going to count to five. If I don't find out which ones of you are the McAllisters by the time I get to five, I'm going to kill this woman. Then I'm going to start counting to five again, kill someone else. And then I'll keep on killing until I find what I'm looking for. One.
You're mad. You wouldn't do that.
Two.
You'll never get away with it.
Three.
No, please.
Four.
I'm Andrew McAllister.
I thought this would bring you out.
Lowering the hammer on his pistol, Loomis signaled for the others to move toward Andrew.
What do you want with me?
Where's your sister?
You've got me. That's enough. You can't have my sister, too.
That's all right. If you really feel that way, I'll just start killing all the women here till I get the right one.
I'm the one you seek.
You're the one I seek. God damn, you folks do talk fancy, don't you? You got any clothes with you?
They're in the baggage car.
Then put on what you was wearing before you climbed into the bed last night. I don't care what you wear, just get dressed, the both of you.
What do you want us to get dressed for?
Because you're coming with us.
What makes you think we're going to come with you?
You want anyone else to die? No. Then both of you get dressed. Pronto.
Loomis Tate knows that the two actors from back east have a rich brother named Falcon. But he's not counting on how fiercely that brother will fight for his kin after Tate's crew, including the venomous albino, kidnapped him for ransom.
It's McAllister!
Falcon McAllister is on a crusade, and his war won't be over until the last bad man drops. Don't miss Crusade of Eagles.
Dear Anya, I found this journal. It contains the story of an Austrian baron, Frederick of Schluter, who heard the tale of a Viking who lived among the Curonians. This Viking was named Thor, and he had an enchanted hammer that gave him power to crush all his enemies. One of the stories told of fabulous treasure that Thor brought with him from his homeland. It's there, Anya. And I think I've almost found it.
Vorfun has gone to Riga in an effort to track down the fortune, but there have been problems.
What kind of problems?
There is a woman who is believed descended from the Curonians. She's supposed to be a witch.
What's her interest?
We think she's seeking the treasure as well. She had taken up with an Italian archaeologist named Mario Fellini. Wolfram arranged to have the man killed, but not before he involved another archaeologist. He sent her a package, but we don't know what the contents were. That woman has proved even more irksome, and it appears now she's hunting the treasure as well.
Who is she?
Her name is Anya Creed.
Archaeologist Anya Creed is drawn into a deadly game of cat and mouse with ruthless international killers intent on finding centuries-old treasure. To survive and prevail, she must depend on the help of old friends. 500-year-old friends, to be exact.
Irvin, shoot her!
This is like ultimate fighting!
Here, Anya!
Thanks for coming.
You're welcome.
There is Anya Creed. We know she's out there stealing our treasure. I'm not going to tell you.
Oh!
Where is she?
Oh. Do you have a map?
But will one of her friends come to a tragic end?
Karin!
Rogue Angel 7, God of Thunder.
No one harms my family.
Thank you.
And now, our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man. Narrated by Mort Shelby, with performances by Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Lynette Savard, Ken Jackson, David Coyne, Christopher Graybill, Johan Detweiler, Dan Smith, Tim Carlin, Michael LaFlogel, James Konacek, Thomas Penny, Michael Glenn, Colleen Delaney, James Lewis, and Dylan Lynch. He was on the east side of the Absarika Range, in the timber, heading down toward the Popojica. He was in no hurry, and there was no real reason for him to go there in the first place. He just had a hankering, you might call it, feeling he might run into some old friends who, like the Lone Rider, had felt the calling for companionship. He hadn't been down there in some time, at least not since the last rendezvous back in 30. He was pretty sure this was the year of our Lord, 1837. It had to be close to that anyway. And if the year was as he reckoned, that'd make him about, 35 years old, near as he could figure. And he'd never felt better in his life. The rider was of average height for his time, lean-hipped and rawhide tough, with tremendous power in his upper body. What women he'd run into over the last 17 or 18 years up in the mountains considered him handsome. He could barely recall the last time he'd seen a white one. Hell, 2-3 years at least. Just thinking about the rendezvous got him all lost in memories, but not so lost that he forgot where he was. He always needed to keep a sharp eye out for Injuns. He rode with his hawk and rifle across the saddle horn and had another one shoved into his saddle boot. He carried 250 caliber pistols behind his waist sash, and two more hung in leather on the saddle horn, one on each side. He'd always boasted that he was a peaceful man, but Injuns is notional folks. He never really could know how to take them. A man can near about always ride into an Injun camp and they'll feed you and bed you down for the night, and they'll usually treat a body right well. Of course, depending on the tribe and the general mood of the day, the rub comes when you try to leave the next morning. They might decide to have some fun, skin you alive. He'd seen what was left of a man after that. It was a disheartening sight, to say the least. He didn't expect the skin fella cared much for it either. The Lone Rider rode easy, ruminating on this and that. He'd seen a white man up the trail about 5 months back when the snow was thick, and he told him it was Christmas. That had got him to feeling all mawkin and the like, thinking about folks and family he hadn't seen in years and probably never see again on this side of the grave. Time gets confusing up in the high lonesome. Months and years just blend together and don't take on a whole hell of a lot of importance. He reined up at a creek and swung down from the saddle, getting the kinks out of his muscles and bones, giving his horse a chance to drink and blow. He rode a mountain horse he'd caught in Gentlebrook, called him Hammer for no particular reason. Hammer was a gray, tough as a mountain goat and stood 18 hands high. His good pack horse was also a gray, just as tough as Hammer and just as smart. He wouldn't tote no more than he felt he could comfortably carry. Overload him, he just wouldn't move. Stand there and look at you with them eyes telling you to get that crap off his back. Smart, you know. The rider looked all around him, then stood still. He could detect nothing in the cool mountain air except the scent of nature's own growth in springtime. No scent of Injuns. After so many years in the mountains, he'd learned that all men had a distinctive scent that could be picked up by others if you teach your blower to do it. He stretched out on his belly by the creek and took him a long drink of clean, cold water. He took off his moccasins and thought about sticking his bare feet in the creek and splashing around some like a kid. But that was liable to get some poor critter downstream sick for a week. He rubbed his feet dry on the grass and slipped back into his shoes. Chewing hard on a piece of jerky, he wished long for some coffee. He'd been out of the stuff for weeks. That was another reason for this trip. He had to resupply with salt and beans, coffee and the like. He also had to get him a new pair of long-handle underwear. His was plumb wore out. His buckskins were thin too, so it wouldn't hurt to get a new pair of them either. He was known from the wet woods of the Northwest to the cool deserts of the Southwest as Preacher. He was far from being a man of the cloth, about as far as a man could get, even though he'd been raised in the church as a boy. When he was new and green to the High Lonesome, Injuns had grabbed him, planning on slow roasting him to see how well he stood pain. If he stood it well, they would praise him and sing songs about him. Of course, those songs would be sort of hard to appreciate from the grave. So he started preaching. He preached all day and all night. The Injuns finally figured he was crazy as a lizard and they turned him loose. And the nickname stuck. Preacher had been in the mountains since he was just a boy. He'd run away from a good home and reached the mountains a year later. And while he left the mountains many times to see what was over the next ridge or river, he always returned to the High Lonesome. He'd lived with a number of Injun tribes, and he'd gotten along with many of them. He'd had him a squaw from time to time, and a few offspring, too. But unlike many of his counterparts, Preacher could see the writing on the wall, so to speak, even though he might have some difficulty reading actual words. The beaver market was glutted, and the man was hard-pressed to make a living of it anymore. And it was only going to get worse. Most of the other mountain men didn't accept it. The Preacher was nobody's fool. He could do a lot of things besides trapping. He could pan for gold, scout for the army or wagon trains, and he even knew a little about farming, although he kept that to himself. Preacher cut his eyes to hammer as the horse raised his head and pricked his ears up. He was over to him in a heartbeat, stroking his neck for comfort with one hand and the pack horse with his other. If they whinnied, they could give away Preacher's position, but they stood quiet. He could tell they weren't liking what they smelled, though, not one damn bit. Preacher sniffed, too. It was Injuns, and their scent was strong. With it came the scent of blood, fresh blood. He picketed both horses on graze and pulled the pistols from the saddle horn. He slipped to the top of a rise and peeked through the brush. What he saw below didn't set well at all. He spotted five young bucks, and he saw they had prisoners. The Injuns looked to be Arapaho, and Preacher never had got on too well with them. They just didn't much like the white men. Preacher lay still, moving only his eyes, carefully checking everything out. It appeared five was all there was, but $5 on the warpath was plenty. He could see fresh scalps on the manes of their horses and on their war lances, and they weren't Injun scalps. The bucks had two white women and two white men, and from the looks on their faces, they were all plenty scared. Lord knows they had a right to be. A lot of wagon trains were pushing west to Oregon or California. Wagons had been rolling to Oregon for several years now. Preacher had him a thought that these poor scared pilgrims was part or had been part of a small wagon train that just ran out of luck.
The Lord will see us through, brothers and sisters. Put your faith in the Lord.
Missionaries come to the wilderness to bring Jesus to the savages. Goddamn fools bringing women folk out here to preach with them.
Preacher knew Injuns didn't like white people. It's not that the whites were right and the Injuns were wrong. It was just that the two led very different ways of life. Whites and Injuns didn't think alike. For instance, Injuns don't steal because they're bad people. It's more of a game to them, and right and wrong don't enter into it. Courage and dying well and bravery mean a great deal to them, and they can't none of them abide a coward. Preacher tried to tell a few missionaries that the Indians didn't need or want their religion. They had a religion all their own, and they practiced it and lived by it. But you'd have better luck trying to tell a lawyer to shut up than you would a Bible thumper. Preacher watched as one young buck pulled at himself and grinned at the others. He knew then that one of the young women, and they were both lookers, was going to get hopped on right then and there in front of God and everybody else. She looked up at the engine from the log where they'd plopped her, confusion and fear on her face. Then that buck just reached down and run his hand right up under her dress.
Here now! You stop that barbaric behavior, you hear me?
The woman's hand was tied behind her back, but her feet were free. She kicked that buck right between his legs. He went down hard, both hands holding onto his privates. Preacher could only wince. He knew if he was going to do something, it had to be now. He was 30 feet away. He eased the hammers back on his old 50 caliber pistols and laid them on the ground. He took the second brace, hoping the powder was dry on them all, and eased the hammers back on them, too. Ahead, another buck jerked out a knife and whacked an ear off one of the men prisoners. The buck gestured to the lady. Any idiot could see if she didn't hike up her skirts and do it real quick, he was gonna cut something else off the man, and it was located a mite lower than his remaining ear.
Melody!
There wasn't any option left to Preacher. He lifted his pistols with the double-set triggers. The first ball hit the buck with the knife in the chest. The second ball hit him in the belly. Both balls from the second pistol hit a brave smack in the face. Preacher dropped the first brace of pistols and picked up the second, aiming them in the direction of the remaining men. He couldn't hardly see a thing for the gun smoke, but he knew he had put four Indians on the ground, leaving one scrambling to his moccasins, still bent over in pain. Preacher jerked his long-bladed knife from its sheath and ran down the short slope toward the terrified pilgrims. He ran right over the skinny Indian with the bruised private, knocked him sprawling back to the ground. The brave jumped up, a war axe in his hand, and he was some mad now. The buck charged, but the preacher ducked, then cut the engine from brisket to backbone with a blade that was honed to a fine edge. The slash took the skinny engine out of it. The preacher ran back to his guns and loaded up again as fast as he could. The women were in shocked silence, and the man with one ear looked at Preacher like he was some sort of devil. Preacher realized that he may well look like one, for that matter. He hadn't shaved in a month or so, and his clothes were made from nothing he couldn't kill, skin, and cure. His hat was so old and floppy it had no shape. Preacher looked like a wild man to these city folks. He moved over towards the woman that had taken the brunt of the brave's attention, and he cut her bound hands free.
Praise be! The Lord has sent us a warrior!
He ain't done no such a thing. I just happen to be close by. Now get them others untied, and let's get the hell going from here before more Indians show up.
We're all Christians, brother, and we don't hold with strong language in front of ladies.
Yeah, that's your goddamn problem. I don't hold with fools coming into the mountains and stirring up the Indians, so I reckon that makes us even.
He held Melody to her feet, and she swayed against him for a moment. She was all woman, that one was, and when their eyes met, Preacher could see that she knew he was all man.
Oh.
A high flush came to her cheeks, and her smile was tight and her eyes bright, like with a fever. Well, they had a fever all right, but it wasn't brought on by sickness. Preacher released her hand, and she stepped away, each knowing what the other was thinking, and Jehovah didn't have a damn thing to do with it.
You don't have to worry about the other savages.
Oh, is that a fact?
You see, the other savages fled in a different direction after the attack.
They didn't flee nowheres. They own these mountains. They got no reason to be afraid. All they did was split up to divvy up the booty. How do you know they didn't plan on meeting up again right here?
We must get our friend Richard here to a doctor. His ear needs to be seen to.
Oh, sure. They got a dock about 250 miles from here. Shit won't take us more than a month to get there. What we will do is get gone from here, and then I'll take a look at your partner's head. Clean it out good. I'd pour some whiskey on it, but I ain't got none.
You probably drank it all, lurching about in some drunken debauchery. Cavorting about with a loose woman. More than likely a pure, simple, ignorant savage you took advantage of.
Amen. It's not only the savages to whom we must introduce God.
Well, now, for sure, I drank the whiskey. As for the second part, no. Let's go. When we make camp, I'll fix up a poultice for old One Ear here. You ain't hurt bad, mister, but you're gonna be tilting your hat to the other side of your head for the rest of your life. Now, all of you, move, goddammit!
They were in trouble. The preacher knew that for a hard fact. The Arapaho bucks back yonder had been wearing red streaks on their faces. To an Arapaho, the color red could only mean three things: earth, man, or blood. In this case, the preacher pretty well knew it meant the latter. As far as getting away, they weren't in the best position for that either. They were caught with the Shoshone just to the west of them, the Blackfoot to the north, the Crow to the east, and the Arapaho to the south, and everywhere else in the immediate surroundings. All in all, it was not a good place to be. Preacher, traveling alone, never gave it much worrying time. He knew how to stay alive in hostile country. But with four pilgrims, two of them females no less, well, now that was quite another matter.
Get up on them horses.
We don't have the proper saddles for the ladies. And by the way, my name is Edmund. The young lady you helped is Melody, that's Richard, and this is Penelope.
Well, I am just thrilled beyond words. Now get up on the damn horses.
Preacher climbed up the gently sloping bank, slid down the other side and fetched his own animals, then led him around to the others. The missionary still hadn't made a move toward the pony. Preacher swung into the saddle and led an Indian pony over to the group. He looked at Melody. Melody didn't hesitate. She stepped up on a log, hiked up her skirts, and swung onto that horse's back. Preacher handed her the reins.
Let's go.
What about us?
Keep your voice down, woman. You put a hog collar to shame. Good God Almighty. You want to come with us? Put your butt up on that pony's back and come on.
Barbarous cretin. You'd leave us, wouldn't you?
You see my back, don't you? That tell you anything?
Are you really going to leave them?
No, but they don't know that.
I'm a worker in the house of the Lord, sir.
Yeah, well, you're a woman first. And a hell of a woman at that. Hang on, sister. You're all lucky them Indians took saddles from the dead pilgrims for their ponies. You'd be plumb uncomfortable if you was riding bareback.
I can just imagine.
Yeah, here come the others. I figured I'd get them moving. Yeah, luckily, looks like the men can ride. Grab a hold of that saddle horn, sister, and hang on. That damn thing ain't for tooting, you know.
Must you use so much profanity?
I will if I want to, and I want to, so hush up and stay in line, and don't get lost. Which way's what's left of the wagon train?
On the Oregon Trail. It's only about a half mile from here.
Oh, shit, somebody been playing games with you folks. The Oregon Trail is way, way south of here. People, you was lost.
As a goose, I knew that, but nobody would listen to me.
I suspected our guy didn't know what he was doing. He drank a lot.
Hell, I know lots of guides who drink a lot. That ain't got nothing to do with it. Where'd you folks outfit and jump off from?
Missouri. Our guide told us we would bypass Fort Hall because he knew a better route.
Damn fool. All right. How far north up the trail you were on is the train?
I would say about 15 miles. No more than that, I'm sure.
Yeah, probably not that far. Indians wouldn't travel that distance in these mountains for torturing and raping, if that's what they had in mind.
Perhaps you could take us onto Oregon.
Yeah, I'll take you somewheres. Yeah!
They all saw the buzzards long before they reached the site of the ambush and massacre. Those carrion birds who had not yet feasted on dead flesh soared and circled and wheeled and waited their turn in the sky, while the others staggered around on the ground too full and heavy to lift off.
This ain't gonna be pretty. I've seen it before. When you puke, don't get none on me. Where are you folks from, anyways?
Philadelphia.
Yeah, should have stayed there. This country's too crowded as it is. Can't ride 5 days without seeing some damn buddy.
It's called progress.
It's a damn nuisance is what it is.
Must you swear constantly?
Yeah, I must. I'm getting in practice for our rendezvous down south, even though it don't look like I'm gonna make it now.
I've read about those affairs. Then you're a real mountain man.
I am.
What drove you to this horrible existence?
Horrible? What's so horrible about it? I'm as free as an eagle, wild as a grizzly, mean as a wolverine, tough as a cornered wolf, and I'm quick as a puma, too. I can out-drink, out-cuss, out-fight, out-dance, out-sing, and ride farther and faster than any man. And I'm pretty goddamn good looking, too.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Why, for being what the good Lord intended me to be? You are what you are, I am what I am. It's just as simple as that, brother. Now, this here is what we call Shine Creek. I know what your guide was up to now, but he was flat out wrong. He'd been listening to lies about a trail through the wilderness just to the west of us. There ain't no wagon trail through there. You'd have to go north over 100 miles and then cut west. Even still, that'd be a tough pull. Get caught there in the winter and you die. You people were listening to a fool. What happened to him anyways?
When the savages attacked, he ran away. I watched him leave.
You know his name?
Jack Harris. I did not like him. He was a lot like you.
Jack Harris ain't nothing like me. Jack Harris is a back shooter and a coward. Brags a lot about how brave he is, but when it comes down to the nut cutting, he ain't nowhere to be found.
He claimed to be a mountain man.
Oh, he's a hanger arounder is what he is. He'd tell you about the time I whooped him down at Fort Bent. No, I suppose he wouldn't mention that. I whooped him to a fare thee well, I did. He ain't liked me to this very day.
What was the fight about?
He said something bad about my mother. Now, you can insult me all day long. If you do it in a friendly manner, I'll just insult you right back. But you leave my dear sainted mother out of it, or get ready to get bloody.
The shifting wind brought a horrible stench with it, wrinkling the noses of the missionaries.
That's... the wagon train?
Yep. Much left of the bodies, that is. Buzzards will try for the soft parts first, the belly and kidneys. It ain't a real pretty sight. I've seen yards and yards of guts all strung out like rope. Why, I remember one time I come up on this Pawnee village that had been hit by a band of Indians that didn't like them very much. Well, shit, nobody likes a Pawnee, and I seen their guts just...
That's quite enough.
Reaching the wagon train, it was evident that the Indians had spent several hours torturing some of the survivors. Melody and Richard both looked pale, overcome by the stench of rotten bodies. Articles of clothing and broken pieces of furniture were scattered all over the area, along with what remained of tortured men, women, and older kids.
Savages! They need the word of God even more than I thought.
Savages, huh? They're still cutting off folks' heads in France and drawing and quartering folks over in England, ain't they? Big public spectacle. Ain't them religious countries? Would you call that civilized?
Where are the young children? There were a dozen or more boys and girls.
Injuns took them to raise. They do that sometimes. If a child behaves, they'll live. Some tribes won't harm a child at all. Others will kill them outright. Look, Injuns are notional, just like white folks, you might say.
I don't know any white person who would harm a child.
Then you don't know many of your own kind, Edmund. You folks start gathering up clothing you think might fit you and what food and powder and shot that might be found. And get yourself some warm clothing.
Stealing from the dead!
You know what, Penelope? You are beginning to wear on me. Do any of you know the trouble you're in? I don't think so. We are smack in the middle of hostile Indian country, and from the paint on them dead bucks, they're on the warpath. Something has stirred them up, and it's reasonable to think that they ain't the only tribe that's took up their war axes.
Preacher knelt down and began drawing in the dirt. The others leaned over to watch him.
Now pay attention. We're here. Dry Creek is behind us here to the east. The south fork of the Shoshone is on our west. The Oregon Trail... Well, that's way the hell down here. And the way I see it is like this. We got hostiles on the war path all around us, and we'd be damn fools to try to make it south to the wagon trail. I guess I'm stuck with you. I can in no good conscience leave you. Hell, you'd all die. Don't none of you seem to know north from south or up from down.
Now see here.
Oh, shut your fly trap. I've been making it in these mountains for years. You're just a helpless baby in the wilderness. And folks, if you think this is wild, you ain't seen nothing yet. We couldn't even make it with wagons where I'm thinking of carrying you. But on horseback, well, we got a chance. We're going into the Big Titties.
The what?
Mountain range that was named Le Grand Teton by a French trapper because they reminded him of big tits. It's wild, people, but also the most beautiful thing you ever seen. It's slow going, but it's the safest way. Now, we might run into some Bannocks in yonder, but I get on pretty well with them. Likewise, in Nez Perce further on west and north. They're good people. It's our only shot, folks, and we gotta take it. Now, help me look around for a bottle of whiskey.
My word, man, are you thinking of getting drunk at a time like this?
No, you dumbass. Take a look at your friend's head, right where his ear used to be. Look at it. It's been filling up with pus. Oh, that's infection to you, I guess. I gotta open it up, clean it out, and cauterize it with a hot blade. The whiskey's for him, to ease the pain. Even with that, y'all are gonna have to hold him down. And if we don't do this, he's gonna die. So shut your mouth and find me some whiskey.
Preacher slowly circled the ambush site on foot and concluded that the Indians who had done this had not been back. No need to, for at first glance there was precious little left to plunder. He began searching the rubble, grateful that the Indians had not burned the wagons. They had raped and killed and tortured and run off with the horses and mules, though. They'd eaten the oxen, then lay up in a stuffed stupor for a day or so. But this was a sight that Preacher had seen more than once since pilgrims began pushing west. He knew all the secret places where folks liked to stash valuables. He ended up finding a bunch of articles he could use, including some soap and some store-bought breeches and shirts that looked like they might fit him. It was a nice Mackinaw coat that had only been burned a little bit, and he took that. Best-looking coat he'd ever had. And bless Pat, he found him some brand new long handles in the bottom of a trunk. He also found him a fancy razor and new strop. He was tempted to take some boots off the dead, but he knew he'd worn moccasins for so long his feet wouldn't be comfortable in anything else. Preacher built a campfire, then focused his attention on Richard's ear. He had to practically sit on Richard to get him to take the first couple slugs of whiskey.
Come on, drink, goddammit!
No! 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 No!
After that, it got easier, till he was just as loose as a goose.
Did I ever tell you about the time I peeped in on my sister while she was taking a bath? Talk about wonders of the Lord. She had two of the... two... huge...
Richard was out cold. Preacher grabbed his knife and went to work. He opened the wound, let it drain, and cut away the infected skin. Then he cauterized the wound after heating his blade over the fire he'd built. Last, he applied a poultice he'd made.
How is he?
Well, it ain't as bad as it looked. He's gonna have him just a nub of an ear, but hell, his hat won't fall down on that side anyways. But he's gonna be hard to get along with for a couple of days. Luckily, high as we are, wounds heal quick. Air's so clean and pure. Of course, it won't be for long, the way folks keep showing up out here. Well, I'm gonna have me a bath down at the creek. Y'all just stay here and holler at me if you're about to get killed by any Injuns.
Preacher bathed from top to bottom, and he hoped nobody downstream tried to drink out of that creek for a day or two. Then he shaved, leaving only a mustache. Finally, he dressed in the new clothes. He felt a little self-conscious. When he strolled back into camp an hour later, he could tell how much his appearance had improved by the startled glances from the three conscious missionaries.
Glory be! You are a fine-looking man.
Melody!
First time in 10 years I've been without a beard. Feels funny. Richard make a sound yet?
Moaned a couple of times. I'm beginning to get concerned about him.
Yeah, he just passed out drunk, that's all. I've been that way myself a time or two.
I'm sure.
Preacher just grinned at Penelope. She needed a good man to roll around in the blankets with her for a night or two. He figured that might change her whole outlook. That night, Preacher found enough canvas that hadn't been burned to use as shelter for the pilgrims. While it wasn't any fancy eastern hotel, it did offer a small creature comfort. Later, as he sat alone by the fire, two horses wandered back into camp, anxious for human closeness. Preacher handily rigged up frames to use them for pack horses. They pulled out the next morning, heading into a wilderness that only a handful of white men and absolutely no white women had ever seen. Richard was in some pain, but he never complained. The man might be a Bible thumper, but he was steadily rising in preacher's estimation. The man asked sensible questions, trying to learn about the land and its people, and preacher answered each question as best he could.
Is this the Shoshone River we're crossing now? It seems more like a stream.
Well, now you're right about that. It's just a small fork off the main river. This branch splits off east of what some folks call Heart Mountain. Indians call it Spirit Mountain. We won't cross the Shoshone today. Tomorrow about noon, if it all goes well, that's when we'll go. Oh, and speaking of Spirit Mountain, you bear in mind to keep out of Injun burying grounds. That'll bring bad medicine on you for sure.
What do you mean by bad medicine? You don't believe in Indian superstition, do you?
What's the difference in what Indians believe and what you're trying to bring them? Hell, only difference is the Indians don't have no book like the Bible. Their religious ways is passed down by mouth. Each tribe has their shamans, and they're like you folks, sorta. They believe in the Great Spirit, life after death. That happy hunting grounds claptrap is white man's bullshit.
I'd be surprised to hear that any race with any spirituality whatsoever would treat a woman the way they tried to treat Melody yesterday.
Don't you think most Injuns is evil, or that their women is loose, cause they ain't. An Injun father's just like any father anywhere. You start messing with his daughter, he'll kill you. You take the Cheyenne tribe, for instance. They are some tough, mean fighters. Everybody's scared of the Cheyenne. But for all their fierceness, they hold women in way high regard. Girls coming of age is a big deal. Hell, any number of tribes worship dogs and wolves, too. If one has to be killed for whatever reason, they'll apologize to it. And to a Cheyenne, the dog's damn near a god. They even have a warrior society called the Dog Soldiers.
Sounds to me like you actually like the Indians.
Well, I do. You can't blame them for fighting the whites. Hell, this is their land. Been there for God only knows how long. Thousands of years, probably. If they'd let me, I'd never strike a hostile blow against any of them. Well, except in maybe them goddamn Pawnees.
At noon the next day, the preacher called a break and the women stepped behind some bushes to do their business. Preacher pulled Richard and Edmund close.
We're being followed. I don't think it's Injuns, and it ain't the army, I'm sure of that. They'd have seen way back that we're not a hostile party and they'd have closed with us. And any good scout would have seen the sign that women leave and they'd be mighty curious. Well, I think we got us some renegades on our trail, and I think they're after the women. So keep your powder dry and be ready to fight, and fight quick. Because when they come, they're going to do it in one of two ways. They'll either come real sudden-like or they'll hail the camp and get in amongst us. And that's what we don't want. Now, I know you two think of yourself as highly principled men, but you just remember, there ain't no law out here except the gun, the knife, and the war axe. And if they're renegades, missionaries or not, they'll kill you both and do it without blinking an eye. Now, you got the women to think about. They got to come first.
Neither one of us has ever used violence against another human being.
Well, you're gonna have to unless you wanna die. So make up your minds. I don't think you've got a lot of time to ponder it.
We should warn the women. I feel they have a right to know about this.
But it's only a suspicion, Richard. Why alarm them unduly?
Just keep the ladies among the men. Rest here. No fires. You understand me? Good. I'll be back in an hour or so.
Preacher took his hawking and set out at a ground-covering lope. He could run all day. He'd done so several times during his life in the mountains. He'd had more than one horse shot out from under him, both by white men and Injuns, by bullet and arrow, and he'd been forced to run for his life. Preacher ran for a couple of miles and scrambled up a ledge. He squatted down, studying their back trail. Far below and behind them, he could pick out tiny doll figures moving toward him on horseback. He counted eight riders, and they weren't Injuns. They only had two pack horses, so they weren't trappers. And they weren't dressed in uniform, so they couldn't be military. That left government explorers or renegades. Preacher had him a strong suspicion they were the latter.
Damn, if that's Bum Kelly's bunch, we are in serious trouble.
Bum had come out back around 28 or 29 and immediately started making trouble wherever he happened to be. He always had anywhere from 10 to 14 thieves and killers and toughs hanging around him, and the gang ranged from the Utah Territory up into the British-held lands. There wasn't nothing Bum and his bunch wouldn't do, and precious little they hadn't done so far, all of it bad. Preacher wished he had him a spyglass, but then he figured as long as he was wishing, he might as well wish for a detachment of soldier boys and about a half a dozen of his good friends like Thumbs Carroll and Nighthawk, Tennessee, and some others. They'd probably be all the way south of his position, though. He might as well wish for the moon. Preacher picked up his rifle and turned to take off, then paused as four more riders caught his eye, one of them leading a pack horse.
Well, that's about right. 12 bad ones. Then there's me with a one-eared gospel shouter, a smart-aleck missionary, and two faithful female followers. Lord have mercy on a poor mountain boy. Mount up. We got big troubles about 5 miles behind us.
You ran 5 miles?
I've run all day, lady, and half into the night before. I'll tell you about it sometime, but not right now. Let's go!
Preacher pushed the group. He knew where he wanted to go. It wasn't no more than a day's ride, and he set a hard pace. They had crossed the Shoshone, and now, instead of cutting south as he had planned, Preacher rode straight west toward a place he'd once wintered. He figured the hidden cave was still there. He had no idea what it would take to make it disappear outside of God.
Stay right behind me. Don't get out of this creek. It won't fool them for long, but it will slow them up trying to figure out where we left. And that, boys and girls, is something that's going to take them a while to do.
They rode for several miles, always staying in the creek, until coming to a sandy, rocky flat.
All right. Stand down for a couple of minutes and rest. Let the horses blow. I gotta do something.
Why are you doing that?
They're socks for the horses, so the steel hooves won't scar the rocks and leave a trail. Get that old ragged blanket off my pack horse and do the same thing with it. Come on, quickly, people. Every minute counts. Now, when we get to moving again, I need you all to stay with me. Don't snag as much as a thread on a branch. And if you do, holler and stop and pick it off. They're going to find this trail eventually. Let's not make it any easier for them.
Preacher led him deep in the virgin forest, forging his own trail. He was thankful for the thick coat of needles and leaves under the horse's hooves. He pointed to a tree which had strange markings some 20 feet off the ground.
Grizzly and a big one. Go stand. Oh, 12 feet high and weigh damn near half a ton, I'll bet. Grizzly gets after you, climb a tree. They're so big and heavy they don't climb. Usually.
It was a trail-weary and saddle-sore bunch that finally slipped out of the saddles just at dusk. Preacher had set a grueling pace, and he knew things were not about to get a whole lot more comfortable.
All right. Cold camp. No fires. Roll up in your blankets now and stay there. Cool, clear night like this, the odor of food cooking or coffee boiling would travel 5 miles. And this spruce and pine's got an odor to it, too.
Not even a little fire?
No, ma'am. You see to your horses, rub them down good, and picking them careful on graze.
Tyrant.
Preacher slept well but cautiously that night, as he usually did in the mountains. He didn't stir at even the loudest of natural sounds around him, but a breaking twig had put him instantly alert. For deer or elk or most forest creatures would not step on a branch unless they were frightened and running. Men step on twigs and branches. The rain woke him several hours before dawn would touch the high country. Climbing out of his blankets, he rolled them in his ground sheet. The others slept on, unaware of anything that was happening around them. They didn't know it yet, but they would have to learn the woods or they'd die. With it raining, he chanced a small fire for coffee, built under an overhang to break up the smoke. He checked the snares he'd set out the evening before and found 2 fat rabbits. He skinned them out, carefully scraping the meat away and saving the skins for glove linings. He had the meat cooking before the others began stirring. Melody was the first up. She completed her morning toilet and joined Preacher by the small fire, both of them waiting for the coffee to boil and the meat to sear.
We're in trouble, aren't we?
Well, it ain't the best situation I ever been in, but it ain't the worst neither. I get to my secret hidey hole, and we can all get some rest and figure out our next move. It'll take Bum and their mother some time to find us air. They might never.
Preacher poured them coffee, both of them cupping their hands around the tin, warming their extremities, for the morning was very cold this high up. The others slept on.
You know, I think that Edmund's sweet on you. Leastways, judging by the way he acts to me.
I know. But I don't share his feelings at all. He's not a bad person, really, Preacher. He's just far out of his element. And he's scared, like all the rest of us. Except you.
Oh, hell. I'd be scared in a big city like Philadelphia. Too damn many people for my tastes. You know what? You don't act like no gospel shouter I ever seen, Melody. Now, Richard and Edmund, yeah. And definitely Penelope. But not you. How'd you get tied up to an outfit like this?
Through a society I belong to. We all thought it would be a grand adventure and we could help bring the Lord to the savages. I'm afraid we didn't think it out very thoroughly.
Yeah, you sure didn't. There's no place for a woman out here. Not yet. Someday, yeah. Hell, someday this country will be ruined with people.
It has to be, Preacher. The nation is growing. People want to build new lives, to explore, to expand. Do you know about the steam locomotives?
The what?
Locomotives that run by steam. It's true. We've had them for almost 6 years now. Soon, the railroads will be running everywhere.
Not out here.
Oh yes, Preacher, even out here. A true visionary by the name of Dr. Hartwell Carver is proposing a transcontinental route.
A trans-what-what?
Coast-to-coast railroad tracks. You wait and see. It will happen.
I never heard of such a thing. Why, I had a man tell me that no more than 5 or 6 years ago, there wasn't but 100 miles of track in the whole United States.
That's true. But I assure you, there are many, many more miles of track than that now.
Yeah, makes a poor man like me feel plumb ignorant.
No, Preacher. Not ignorant. Just isolated, that's all. When was the last time you read a newspaper?
I don't remember. I mean, I can read. I went to the 5th grade. But it's just been so many years since I read a word that I'd have trouble, I imagine.
I understand that there's talk already of an expedition to chart a route from St. Louis to San Francisco. Although I'm sure it will be several years before that happens. Can you just imagine that? A railroad from St. Louis westward all the way across the nation? It's mind-boggling. Preacher, the government will be looking for men like you to lead those scouting parties. Men like you who know the wilderness that so many of us have only read about. Ignorant, Preacher? You're far from that. You've been to California?
Oh, yeah. I've seen the Blue Waters a couple of times. Been to California and Oregon. Hard, mean trip from here. That's why a railroad's gonna be impossible. You can't build no damn railroad through these mountains. That's a pipe dream. You can't even get a wagon through, hardly.
But you are going to take us to Oregon, aren't you, Preacher?
Well, I sure ain't gonna leave you out here alone.
Melody smiled and kissed Preacher right on the mouth.
Whoa!
Startled Preacher so bad he spilled the hot coffee right on his crotch.
What's
the others thought they were under attack and their faces were a picture of pain. Penelope got all tangled up in her blankets and Richard jumped out of his, the back flap to his underwear hanging down.
Hey, Bum. I lost their tracks. He took them into the creek yonder. I don't know whether he went up or down. Down if he was smart.
Preacher's damn sure smart, Slug. He's as wily a mountain man as ever tracked a deer, and he's dangerous as any puma. One time down on the Poison Spider Creek, an old boy named Jason Dunbar got to needling Preacher about his name. Preacher took all he could stomach and told him to lay off or stand up and get ready to duke it out. Dunbar was a good foot taller than Preacher and outweighed him by 100 pounds. But when Preacher got through with Dunbar and finally let him fall, Jason Dunbar didn't have no front teeth left, couldn't straighten up for a week, and only had half of his left ear. Preacher had bit off the top. Yeah, Preacher's smart, he's mean, he's tough, and he's quick. And when we catch him, and we will catch up to him and then folks, he won't go down easy. Rest assured, we'll lose some people, all right. Bridger, Broken Hand, Fitzpatrick, Carson, and Beckworth all speak highly of the man. And them boys don't get praised lightly.
Two women out there, white women. Been a long time since I had me a taste of white women.
Hell, Slug, I ain't even seen a white woman in more than 2 years.
Jack Harris was leading them pilgrims straight to us. How the hell was I supposed to know a bunch of Arapahoes waiting in ambush? Shit, that's just my luck.
Where the hell did Jack get off to?
He was running for his life, probably. He's probably settling down and hunting our trail now. He'll be alone. Let's find out and try and pick up Preacher's trail.
South down the creek, bum?
No, Beckman. By now, Preacher knows we're tracking him. He ain't gonna do this the easy way. George, you take a few boys and head south a ways just to make sure. Beckman, you take the west side of the creek. Moses, you take the east side. You both work north. Rest of us will wait here so as not to crap up any sign. Adam, you build us a fire and we'll boil some coffee. White women. And them men with him is toting gold, too. I got a good feeling about this. A real good feeling.
Preacher led the group up a gently sloping hill to a jumble of rocks on a ledge. A towering mountain loomed high above them, snow-capped all year round.
It gets right close in here, folks. Mind your feet and knees.
Preacher led them into a narrow, twisting passageway that was just wide enough for them to pass with not 3 inches to spare on either side. There was just enough light filtering in from a crack high above them to illuminate their way. The narrow fissure suddenly opened into a high, huge, cathedral-like cavern with a bubbling stream running right through it.
I don't think anybody else knows about this place. Them drawings on the walls there was done hundreds of years ago, I reckon. Lord knows I ain't never seen no beasties that look like some of them animals yonder. If you was to talk to an Injun about this place, he'd tell you it was the people who came before who done this. That sounds reasonable to me.
About 100 feet long and several times that in width, the other end of the cavern opened up into a beautiful little valley, about 25 or 30 acres of lush grass and a winding little creek.
Oh, incredible.
Is the way we came in the only entrance?
Nope, there's another way. See that waterfall across the valley? There's another cave under that. Leads into a blowhole on the other side.
A what?
Long time ago, years I guess, must have been a terrible storm struck here. Tore up several hundred acres. Huge trees tore up by the roots and tossed every which way, piled on top of one another and flying willy-nilly. Now that cave comes out direct into all that mess. Them's chasing us might look a little ways into that blowdown, but they sure as hell ain't gonna give it no good look-see. It's too wild a place. Now in here where we is, the smoke filters up through them cracks in the ceiling, disappears somewheres else. I built me a roaring smoking fire in here one winter's morning, spent the rest of the day outside. I never seen no smoke nor smelled none. We're as safe as I can make us. Now, what I want you folks to do is this. Strip down the horses and put them out the pasture. I'm gonna take my bow, go into that blowdown and kill us a deer or two so as we'll have some meat to go along with the beans and bread that you ladies is gonna make from the flour we salvaged back at the ambush site. There's fish in the stream in the valley that's mighty good eating. I'm gonna be gone the rest of the day, maybe the night, but don't worry, I'll be back. Just as long as a rattler don't bite me, a bear don't tree me, a puma don't jump me, or an Injun don't kill me.
I hate to be macabre.
Whatever the hell that means.
But what happens if you don't return?
Well, now you just sit tight till your supplies is just about gone. By that time, if you don't eat all the damn day long, Bum and his boys will have given up and gone. Then you head west. That's the direction that the sun sets in, you know. If you come to a great big body of water, that there's the Pacific Ocean. So you'll either be in California or Oregon country.
You don't have to be insulting.
Preacher stared at Penelope as she dismounted and just shook his head. He got his bow and quiver of arrows and left the cave, heading out into the meadow. Melody stood in the mouth and watched Preacher until he was gone from sight. Penelope was lying down, exhausted from the travels, and Edmund was standing beside the horses.
He's quite a man, Melody, but not the man for you.
Whatever in the world do you mean, Richard?
It's easy to see that you're quite smitten with him, Melody. We've all commented on it. But I urge you to think about what you're doing and try to curb your emotions. The man is a wanderer, a will-of-the-wisp. He'll only break your heart.
It's purely platonic, Richard. Nothing more. I enjoy his company, that's all. He's a fascinating man who has packed 10 average lifetimes into one.
Melody, I don't want to appear ungrateful for all he's done for us. He saved our lives and continues to do so hourly. But the man is only a cut above a savage. I doubt he's had a fork in his hand in 10 years. He eats with his fingers. The two of you come from different worlds.
You worry needlessly, Richard. Come, let me change the dressing on your ear. In years to come, no matter where we might be, we'll look back on this episode and enjoy a good laugh.
When Preacher returned to the cave at nightfall, he was packing somewhere near 150 pounds of raw deer meat. Only a few minutes after getting back to the cave, Preacher had 5 steaks sizzling.
We'll smoke and jerk the rest of it. Tomorrow I'll pick some berries and we'll make pemmican. After the meat's dried, that's what you call jerky, I'll pound it into powder and mix it with pulp and whole berries and the fat that I saved from the venison after I cooked it down. You mix all that up and it keeps for a long time. I got some over there in my parflesh. You try some, it's good.
What's a parflesh?
That rawhide case yonder. Hand it here. Oh, fine curtain, y'all. It's really good.
Preacher passed the parflesh around, and the others reluctantly tried some of the concoction. They all smiled as they chewed.
It really is good.
Well, y'all gonna bring Jesus to the savages? I reckon now's a good time to start your learning. You gotta know something about these folks.
We were to be instructed in Oregon.
No, them's Coast Indians. Chinook and Spokane and the like. Hell, they all about either civilized or whooped down by now. I'm talking Indians, folks. Scalp hunters, warriors, finest horsemen on the face of the earth. Comanche, Pawnee, Ute, Shoshone, Apache, Blackfoot, Arapaho, Crow, Kiowa, Flathead, Assiniboine, Dakota, that'd be Sioux to you, Nez Perce. There's more, but them's the important ones you'll be seeing, I imagine. Most of the ones I just named is hunters and warriors.
Do they have order in their societies?
I reckon tradition might be the glue that keeps the tribes together. I don't know what else could do it. All the tribes is different, but yet they're alike in a lot of ways. When the white man finally gets up ahead of steam and starts coming this way, and they will, there's gonna be a lot of blood spilt on both sides. At first, it's gonna be mostly white people who die. But that won't last long. From what I've been able to pick up during the past few years, east of the Big Muddy is fairly overflowing with people. They gotta come west. The Indians ain't gonna adopt the white ways, and the white sure as hell ain't gonna adopt the Indian ways. So what we're gonna have, to my way of thinking, is a great big bloody mess that's gonna go on for years.
Then the savages have to be convinced that they cannot stand in the way of progress. That's where people like us can help.
Oh, I see. White man's way is the only way, huh? Well, we sure take a lot upon ourselves, don't we, Edmund?
Civilization and progress must continue if we, as a nation, are to survive. That's the way it's always been and must continue to be.
Says who?
Now, this discussion is silly. You obviously are not prepared to meet the challenge of a changing world. You miss the point of it all.
Oh, I get the point. A lot of other folks will, too. The point of an era.
Preacher spent the next morning backtracking the way they entered the cave, carefully erasing all signs of anyone ever having come that way. He spent a couple hours inspecting the sides of the narrow passageway, picking off hair the horses left as they rubbed the sides here and there. When he was satisfied, he could do no more to ensure their safety. Preacher rejoined the group in the cave.
Any sign of them?
No, but they'll be along. White women's too grand a prize for them to give up on. And they probably figure you're carrying gold.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, really, Richard? Them money belts y'all toting don't fit too well. They pooch out from time to time. How much you boys carry?
That is none of your affair.
You're right, it ain't. But if I'm to put my life on the line for you folks, I figure I at least ought to know what I'm dying for.
This money must get to our new mission in Oregon. It isn't ours. This is money raised by our organization back east. Contributors' money. This is money that will be used to further God's work.
You ain't got no poor folks back in Philadelphia could use a helping hand? Well, that must be quite a prosperous place. Rich folks just abounding everywhere. I sure wouldn't fit in. And didn't nobody ever tell you that it ain't fitting for unmarried young men and women to go traipsing off unchaperoned anyways? What do you girls' mamas and daddies think about this trip, huh?
We left with their blessings. They know that we are both very trustworthy and level-headed women. One of us is, anyway.
Don't worry, Penelope. I'll look after you. I did promise your mother.
Bum Kelly and his boys patiently searched, and as Preacher had predicted, they found the trail after Preacher had left the rocks of the creek. The outlaws stood on the fringe of the mountain range and gazed at the towering peaks that stood silently before them.
He's heading into the wilderness. You know that country, Bum?
Can't say as I do. I've skirted it a time or two, taking the south route. But that damn Preacher seems to know every rock between the borders, the Big Muddy, and the ocean. And he turned north, right into the Tetons. Damn his eyes.
How old a man is this feller, anyways?
35 or so, I reckon. He come out here, so the story goes, back when he was about 12 or 13 years old, and he ain't never stopped exploring. So he's got 20 or so years of experience behind his belt, and he's as tricky as they come.
He know you?
He knows me, and he don't like me.
Hey, Bum! Here comes Jack Harris. I knowed he'd catch up with us.
Put on some grub, boys. I ain't eating days.
What happened back yonder at the wagon train, Jack?
Them engines came out of nowhere, I tell you. I didn't have a clue they was there. I jumped off a flat and hit the timber at the first yell, because I could see we didn't have a chance. The outriders went down first. I don't know what happened after that. I was too busy flogging my horse getting away from there. I waited 2 days, I think it was, and went back looking for food. I couldn't find nothing, except some bloody bandages and shod tracks heading west. You boys and somebody else's, I just started following along.
That somebody else is Preacher. I recognize that big gray of his through my spyglass. He's got them gospel shouters and the women with him, and he knows we're on his trail and he's wary.
Preacher? What the hell's he doing up here? He's supposed to be down on the Poposia at the rendezvous.
Well, he ain't. And he took them folks into the wilderness yonder.
In there? Northwest of the Talking Smoke?
I don't think so. I think he's got him a hidey hole in the Lonesome Yonder, and he's all tucked away, thinking he's safe.
He is pretty damn safe in there, Bum. I don't know that country. Hell, don't nobody really know that country. Well, a few does, and Preacher's one of them.
You want to give up?
No. Them two men was heavy with gold. And them women, boys. I swear I ain't never seen nothing so fine in all my days.
How fine?
Fine enough to fight a grizzly for.
I bet they smell good, too. I just can't hardly wait.
The Preacher spent that morning rigging deadfalls and other traps in the darkness of the twisting entranceway. He had warned the others not to enter there, but he decided to give them a demonstration of how it worked firsthand.
Ah! Hideous!
Awful!
Such a terrible thing to do to a person.
I just hope it works, Preacher.
Oh, it will. The first one to hit the traps in this passageway will get a rock fall like that right on top of them. That'll make the others awful cautious, but they'll press on. But the second trap will stop them cold, maybe for a day. And by that time, we'll be far away and pushing hard.
Now Preacher sat on the outside of the cave exit, overlooking the valley. He carefully cleaned his weapons and placed them at the ready, knowing it was only a matter of time.
Preacher, can Edmund and I have a word with you privately?
Yeah, sure. Sit down.
You didn't just stop here for safety's sake, did you, Preacher?
What else you think I had on my mind?
You knew we needed several days of rest. My wound needed to heal, and we all needed to lay about and eat and regain strength. If you were alone, you would have been 100 miles away by now. You're risking your life for people you hardly know. You're a very brave and complex man, Mr. What is your Christian name?
Preacher will do. Yeah, there's some truth in me wanting to get you folks rested some. When we leave here, we're going to be pushing hard, but not much time to rest. Now, there's a small fort down near Massacre Rocks on the Snake. Fort Hall, I believe it's called. A few soldier boys down yonder. But it's going to be hell getting there. If I can get y'all to the fort, that'll put you back on the Oregon Trail, and it being springtime and all, chances are good a wagon train is there, or one'll be coming along shortly.
And you'll leave us there?
Well, why should I stay any longer, Ed?
Well, Melody, if I may speak frankly.
Well, she's a fine-looking woman. Good woman, too, I believe. Got staying power to her. I like her. I'll say that in front of God and everybody else. I mean, that's uncomfortable to me, but it's a nice feeling for me, too. It's been a long time since I experienced anything like that. But our worlds is different. They're too far apart. If I don't fit in her, she sure as hell don't fit into mine. So you can relax, Pilgrim. You won't see me again. This is my world. The mountains, the wilderness, the open sky. And I plan on dying out here. My good horse will stumble, or an engine's arrow, or war axe will find me. Hell, I might get cornered by a bear, and we'll have us a high old time, just roaring and yelling and clawing and biting down on one another. No, Melody don't fit into them plans.
I believe she might have something to say about that.
Well, she might think so, but she don't. Oh, I know the signs, all right. I can see them on her face and in her eyes. But once I leave the lot of you at Fort Hall, I'm gone like the wind. I gotta see country I ain't never seen before. And I can't do that with no woman tagging along. Not unless it's a squaw who's used to the hard ways of the trail. Now, y'all start getting your possibilities together. I'm fixing to move some things close to that blowdown hole.
Oh, you think those hooligans are close?
Close? I think they're right outside by now. Probably trying to find a way in.
Preacher scrambled up the slope and sides of the valley and stepped into a maze of virgin brush and timber. The bench that had encircled the little valley was about 300 yards deep. He made his way carefully to the outer edge and was not surprised to see Bum and several of his gang moving slowly toward the rock face, a tracker on foot carefully studying the ground. Preacher backed off and silently made his way back to the cave.
No talking. They're outside now. Get your gear together and go to the waterfall in the valley. You'll see a natural lean-to on the north side of the falls. It's big enough for all of you and the horses. I take my pack horse with you. No fires. Now get gone right now.
The missionaries were gone in 10 minutes, gathering up their gear and heading out toward the horses. Preacher quickly packed up what he would carry out and set the pack by the mouth of the cave. He went outside and saddled his horse, then came back into the cavern. He sat back and waited, his .54 caliber Hawken at the ready.